This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review Talk Show with Dr. Lou Campomenosi from the Common Sense Campaign. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98, and in Malbus on 181. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Laurie. Another glorious day in a glorious country. But you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of people out there who don't think our country is so glorious, and they're doing some pretty bad things. And I think we need to kind of talk about this today. And I think what I wanted to try to do is frame this question about what is going on based on a couple of issues that popped up last week. Okay, the Chauvin trial, I think, is important. And the argument that Biden is making in his, quote, New Green Deal approach to things, that they want to force banks not to subsidize or give loans to fossil fuel companies. Now, you think about this for a second. That means that they are going to impose their view of the Green New Deal with all of its costs and all like that, okay? But think about how you have a situation where you own an oil company and you're doing quite well, and you've got all these people who are part and parcel of, you know, your company and what they do, and you're not going to be able to get a bank loan to do the kinds of things that businesses need to do.
How can the federal government tell a private bank they can't loan money to a certain group or a business?
Isn't that a good question? Okay, so we hope that we will find people who will sue the hell out of the federal government and perhaps win. I liken this to this whole question about, remember the Obamacare argument that came before the Supreme Court, that the federal government could not force people to buy certain things, okay? Now, that's a principle that one could argue is extended into the federal government not being able to tell, you know, banks or others that you can't do certain types of business. We'll see how this goes, but once again, understand how someone like Justice Roberts found a way to make the Obamacare doable, bypassing the argument that we just made that the feds can't make you buy something, by saying, well, it's just a tax, despite the fact that Obama said this wasn't a tax increase, okay? So my point here is that we need to kind of look at those things. I need to also talk about how citizen resistance is going to be the key to stopping what's going on in Washington, D.C., okay? And I'll use an example of a group that just formed in Pensacola, right outside of Pensacola in Gulf Breeze. I got a chance to speak to the group. I've known the group leader for a long time, and I want to talk about how that went and again, use that group as an illustration of what is happening in terms of this volcano that's erupting about resistance to the socialist domination of the federal government linked to the Black Lives Matter, you know, movement, which has completely taken over to a very large degree educational curriculum that basically says that this is a systemically racist country and whites are privileged and this has got to end.
Are you going to get into how the BLM leaders are
communist organizers,
millionaires, and funded
the
by
system.
Mega businesses,
right,
such as Amazon,
yes,
Microsoft,
sure,
etc.
Right, and Soros. Yes. Yeah, I mean, so I want to talk about that. And then I want to kind of wrap up with, you know, there's a lot of issues going on with the state legislature right now. But for us, HB 440, I mentioned this last week, is critical for us going forward, because if we could finally get a vote on getting rid of Common Core, I think not only would the children of Alabama be benefited by that, we would also send a strong signal of resistance to federal encroachment over education. So let me just start, though, with this whole question about what is going on with the two issues I mentioned right at the start. The Derek Chauvin trial, I think, is an important thing to talk about for a variety of reasons, okay? But one of the key things that I think we need to think carefully about is that a guilty verdict was almost preordained simply because of the threat of mob violence. Now, you think about this, okay? After George Floyd's death, we saw what happened in Minneapolis, okay? They burned, they looted, they did all of those kinds of things in the name of George Floyd. Now, I find it kind of funny to see people walking out of stores with all sorts of goods and everything in the name of George Floyd. What does all that mean? Okay, it means to me that a complete breakdown of law and order. If you're unhappy with George Floyd's death, which, again, just as a sidebar note, here's an individual who had a history of criminal behavior, who had all sorts of physical problems, so that he really gave himself up to the possibility that something bad could happen to him when he took all sorts of drugs. And that morning that he was in that car, he had fentanyl in his system. Okay, he was having a hard time breathing, sitting in the seat. And when he tried to get out and started to resist, that's when they put him on the ground. And of course, Chauvin did what we all know happened. But let me just say this, the context of him using the knee on the neck was something that was well within the parameters of what the Minneapolis police could do. Okay? Now, we may not like that, and maybe they should change that, but the fact is that within the rules of engagement for the Minneapolis police at that time, he could do that. Now, I recognize, in retrospect, you know, he probably overdid it and maybe should have listened to him. I got that. But you see, it really doesn't matter. BLM, those folks are looking for an excuse to unleash the furies of hell against the United States because they want to fundamentally change America just like Obama did. So think about it. Whether it's the poor policeman who shot this black girl who was ready to stab another girl. I mean, it's pretty clear that you either stop her or this other girl is going to die, more than likely die. What are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do if you're that Chicago cop who's running, chasing this 13-year-old who's, you know, ready to do all sorts of bad things at midnight? Where are the parents for this? I mean, the social breakdown aspect of all of this is really a sub-question that needs to be answered. But guess what? We've had social breakdown ever since Daniel Patrick Moynihan talked about the black family being destroyed in 1965, for which he was called a racist for having daring to say the truth about what's happening. You cannot have a family unit that is not going to be represented with a father and a mother who are going to be there to take care of the kids. And yet, that's exactly what's happening. You know what's really interesting is that the kinds of problems associated with the destruction of the black family. 1940, you had about 10% illegitimacy in the black community. At the height of segregation and Jim Crow. At the height of it. And now, you know, Moynihan's talking about the black family being destroyed in 1965 as a result of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program, which was paying people to have children out of wedlock. The illegitimacy rate was 25% in the black community then, about 7% in the whites. Today, it's over 70% in the blacks and 30%. Oh, Laurie is surprised. Oh, yes. 70%. Over 70% in the black community. Now it's over 30% in the white community.
Illegitimate.
Yes, illegitimacy. Okay, so my point here is that, you know, there's all sorts of things going on that need to be addressed, okay? But no one can say these kinds of things without being labeled a racist. I'm sorry. I'll say what I have to say. That's a fact. George Williams, who's been on our program, George is an outspoken critic of what's going on in the black community, coming from a black man. You know he gets for that? He gets to be called an Oreo and Uncle Tom and all the rest of that. I mean, so to be again, and this predates wokeness and cancel culture. George has always stood up and said what he needed to say. And so, you know, he's taken the brunt of the criticism that comes right back at him for daring to speak truth to power. And I think that, you know, these kinds of issues that I'm suggesting to you today, you know, are part and parcel of what is going on with BLM, and I think that I'll talk more about that in just a second. But here we have this situation where Chauvin is going to be guilty no matter what. And here again we get Maxine Waters showing up on the scene saying we've got to be more confrontational. Now, everyone criticized her about that. They actually tried to bring some sort of an ethical thing with, oh, God, Lori's showing her to me as I'm speaking. Oh, gee, thank you, Lori. Well, I just lost my train of thought. No, I didn't. Here it is. I mean, be more confrontational. Well, what the hell does that mean? Does it mean, well, let's do more like Portland and Seattle and do those kinds of things day after day after day? You know, everywhere, be more confrontational because of the outrageous lie that this country is racist, okay? So I want to talk more about that in just a second, but my point here is if mobocracy is going to be the rule now, we are going to have a big, frigging problem.
Mobocracy.
Yes, don't you like that?
I do.
Yes.
Mobocracy.
Okay. Mobocracy, the rule of the mob. Just look at Chaz and Chad or whatever they call that on Seattle. That's what you're going to get. All right, so here then, one of the outcomes that I think is extremely detrimental to law and order is having people like good old, you know, Maxine Waters show up to throw gas on the fire. This is not good, folks. It just ain't good, okay? And we better find a way to sort this out. But I'll tell you one thing. When Justice Robert ostensibly was heard saying that he did not want to touch the whole question of, you know, the steal of the 2020 election because of his fear of rioting, well, if that is true, and I hope it isn't, but unfortunately I think there's more truth to it than not, then we are in for a very dark period because these folks have tasted the blood. They've been successful in Portland. Look at what's going on. A small group of people have made Portland a hellhole. And those leaders out there have let it happen. So, if anything, the Derek Chauvin trial, you have to conclude, is that mobocracy works. And having tasted success, they're not just going to give it up simply because people like me are talking on the radio. Oh, no. No, no, no. Other people are going to have to get involved with this, and other people who can actually stop them, and that means the police. But then, you know, Portland defunded their police. Other places have tried to defund it. It's an interesting take on what is going on. And again, the liberal white culture seems to be supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the things that emanate from that argument that they're making, the various arguments, and one of them is defund the police. Police are racist, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you say Chauvin's a racist because of what he did. Well, you could make the case that a criminal like George Floyd brought about a lot of this on himself, resisting arrest, which seems to be a common denominator for all of these arrests and problems that we've seen here recently. But that's a secondary line of thought here. Let's just follow this argument, though, for a second, that Black Lives Matter wants to defund the police. Okay? Who gets hurt most by defunding the police? It's going to be the inner city blacks who are already suffering increases in crime rates across the country, whether it's New York, whether it's Chicago, you name the place. They're all up, in part because the police have been not only defunded, but there's a tremendous signal that's gone out. You do something wrong, you're going to have a problem. And I do think that one of the things that's happened here is that, you know, the danger point is this thin blue line that stands between us and the criminal element is eroding. And in Chicago, it's the classic example of erosion going faster and faster, in part because of a consent decree that the Obama administration forced on Chicago in 2015, which moved the police into a a less aggressive approach to dealing with the gangs, and you see the result. That's the result that you're going to get with all of this if mobocracy prevails. So I think that, you know, to a very large degree, you know, we have got to rally around the police. We've got to rally the argument to stop this as best we can. And I'll talk a little bit more about this when I talk about this Patriots group that I just talked to on Monday. Okay. The second thing I want to talk about quickly is this argument that that Biden is making as part of his new Green New Deal. Now, I know he ran against the Green New Deal, didn't want to be associated with it because it was a toxic argument. AOC and these people were toxic as far as middle America is concerned. Too far, far too progressive. Okay, got it. So suddenly he's embraced all of this. And AOC is ecstatic about his embracement. Is that a word, embracement? Well, whatever. So one of the things that he said, though, and it's a crucial part of the approach to get away from fossil fuels and shift to an all green, in you know, production of energy, which again we've said this before on this program. Conceptually, it sounds fine. In reality, it's very difficult to implement it because the technology is not there to save the energy that is produced by wind and solar. Okay? It may be there in a while, but you saw what happened in Texas during the winter storms. The wind turbines froze up. The rest of the grid could not compensate. And this is Texas's fault for not having, you know, a fallback position. But be that as it may, California has gone through the same thing, only it's by design. They have forced Green New Deals in California to the detriment of people like us who actually think that it's the government's responsibility to provide these kinds of, you know, energy sources that make life a little bit better. Now, I suppose we can run the reel back and go back to, you know, 100 years ago where none of this was possible, and, you know, I got that. But on the other hand, the question of progress does kind of creep in here. And so society as we know it, which has a certain amount of progress associated with the conveniences of a modern society, certainly suggests that we should be striving to try to improve on those, not take them away. Again, the third world is trying to achieve any kind of, quote, development because they're living in, the S-hole word that Trump used. So what the hell does it mean? They want us to go back to that? Meanwhile, they're trying to bring these third world countries up to where we are. So, I mean, it's intellectually incoherent in my view, but nevertheless, that's what they're doing. Okay? And at the same time that they want to take us back to a standard of living, you know, 100 years ago, they're making it possible for these third world countries to improve their development by taxing us in order to give money to the underdeveloped third world. I mean, so there's nothing new about this. It's been in the UN for a long time that the third world countries are trying to affect this sort of, you know, income redistribution. So income redistribution, whether it's on the national or a international level, does not hold a lot of promise in my view, but nevertheless, that's what they're trying to do. So here you have the religion of the environmentalists coupled with a dynamic Green New Deal, which has been sold to a lot of people on the false premise that the global warming is taking place as we speak. Look, because of pollution and man-made consequences, along with cows that have all sorts of problems. I got that. But let's just kind of think about this for a second. Bjørn Lomborg, a Danish environmentalist, climatologist, has questioned this for years, but he only shows up on Fox News or on, you know, the Journal editorial report on Saturdays. Nowhere is there a counter view that says this climate business is just, well, as, to use Russ's old phrase, a hoax. I've suggested in my classes, on in my IR classes, that this is a problem because a few years ago there was a major leak of documents out of one of the universities in England, and those documents all showed that there was a consistent effort to suppress any dissent that showed that that climate was changing because of man-made reasons. So my degree of skepticism about all this, I think, is well-grounded. But in the end, it doesn't matter. This is a religion. They're pushing their agenda. And what's going to end up happening is that you and I are going to suffer from this. And I think it's an outrage. And it's not necessary. But we have got to move in the direction of stopping this, which takes me to my point about what I wanted to mention about this group that I spoke to last Monday. Okay, this is a citizens group, aptly named Patriots of the Gulf Coast, homed in Gulf Breeze, Florida, right adjacent to Pensacola. So why is this important? Because patriot groups like them, like Common Sense, like others that have been forming up in all of these states, are the lifeblood of freedom. Now think about it. You say, oh, come on, you're just exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating it. If it wasn't for some of these groups working in these battleground states to make sure that the Georgia laws, election laws, were modified so that the steal can't happen again? You don't think that's important? You don't think it's important that the similar groups are working in Michigan to change what happened there because a governor went crazy along with the Secretary of State and overrode the election laws there? The same thing in Arizona. The same thing in Pennsylvania. So, folks, when I say that there is this volcano of erupting patriots coming on the scene, I think that's quite apt, and it's quite important, because if we don't have citizen, you know, participation to stop what's going on, then it's over, because the bad guys have the power right now. And in the Senate, two, Senator Manchin, who we've talked about, and Senator Sinema. These two people don't seem to be going along with the flow of the Democratic far-left agenda. So what we're looking at here is the Democratic process may be saving us from the worst aspects of this business that Biden is proposing with his $2.2 trillion Green New Deal under the heading of an infrastructure bill. So what I'm suggesting to you here is that talking to that group that I did on Monday, led by Patty Burke, a longtime friend of Common Sense, we've worked together on any number of issues, and so she asked me to come and talk to her and sort of give the new group some ideas about, you know, how to organize, what to do, because Common Sense has been doing this for 10 years now. Okay, so fine. So, I mean, Patty takes about the first 10 minutes and goes through committee discussions, you know, updates from her committees. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they don't need me to be talking about anything like that. They're already well on their road to success. They are organized. They're doing all the right things. She had also asked me to talk about some of the issues pertaining to, you know, issues that we have to defend ourselves against, such as, you know, the 1619 Project, such as critical race theory, such as the Black Lives Matter movement. So I did those things. I did speak about that. And I did speak about Obama's foreign policy. So briefly summarizing what I said, in terms of 1619, the 1619 lie is that the American Revolution, which I've said to you guys before here, the American Revolution was not about keeping slavery. We had already had an anti-slavery movement within the colonies long before the Revolution. Okay, 1688, Germantown meeting. You want to be a Quaker? Can't have slavery. 1754, that's exactly what they finally enacted. 1780, three colonies abolished slavery soon after the Declaration. 1783, two more followed. 1787, the newfound Constitution in terms of what they were talking about doing, what you end up having is the Northwest Ordinance, 1787, no extension of slavery into the new territories. And then, 1806, the slave trade ends. How does Hannah Jones, who got the Pulitzer Prize for 1619, how do you defend that proposition that this revolution was all about keeping slavery when the Constitution itself gets rid of the slave trade, which is the lifeblood of the whole system? So I say the hell with all that. This is just BS history, but it's dangerous history because this stuff is being put into the education system and we've got to stop it. And this is why it's important for, you know, groups like Patriots of the Gulf Coast to do the kind of hard work that's necessary to dig into what their school system is doing. And look, they've got a great governor over there. They've got DeSantis. He took away Common Core. Hell, we've got Meemaw up there in Montgomery, and all she's doing is keeping Common Core, which is why we're trying to get rid of it through the legislature. Okay? But my argument here basically is that this whole question about 1619 linked to Black Lives Matter. What's the major issue with Black Lives Matter? Every white is racist. The system is systemically racist. Okay? Now think about this. All whites are racist. How do you explain the fact that 70% of all marriages today are interracial? How the hell are we all racist if that's the case? How is it that we're racist when in 1970, you had 250,000 interracial marriages. Today, it's over 5 million, and yet we're all racist, okay? On the face of it, all whites being racist just doesn't square with some of the facts out there. But aside from those kind of demonstrable facts, how about this? When Martin Luther King asked for the pastors in his Birmingham letter to work with him to change the system, to make it more just, okay, so that the system would reflect a person's character, not the color of their skin. This is 1964 when that's written. And within a short period of time, the Civil Rights Act is passed. Maybe that was 1963 for the Birmingham letter. But the point is, by 1964, Civil Rights Act is passed, Voting Rights Act the next year, and I've said to you all before, a social and political revolution took place. In 1960, you had about 1,000 black officials elected in the country. By 2012, it's 10,000. You've got a black president in 2008. How the hell do you think he got elected? Just on the black minority? Don't be kidding yourself in buying into this Black Lives BS that everyone's racist. If that's the case, how did Obama win? My God, I wish he hadn't won. Okay, but he did, and he won with white help. Now, do you think for a second that if we're all racist, that people are going to vote for a black guy? And listen, I didn't vote for him. I'd never vote for him, but not because he's black. It's because of what he stands for, what he stood for, and still stands for. It's a destructive ideology that too many people bought into. So, but this argument about race doesn't stand up, and Black Lives Matter, you know, is full of hooey as far as I'm concerned. But look what who they really are. You've got the originators of Black Lives Matter, all self-proclaiming on their website, that they are Marxist organizers. Okay, I said this last week. Hey, we won the Cold War. I don't have to argue about, you know, how detrimental Marxism is to most places that have had to deal with it. Okay, go down the list, you know, China, Russia, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so here's Black Lives Matter now telling us that it's all about white privilege. Well, I'm not quite sure how all of this works itself out in terms of, you know, privileging, okay? There are certain people who are privileged, but traditionally they have been the wealthy, officials who are elected, okay? But that's not everyone who's white in this country. Most people who are white in this country are hardworking, doing the kinds of things they have to do in life 101 struggle. That's it. You know, if you go into a restaurant, you expect to be treated well, whether you're black, white, or ever. If you go in and you're, you know, one of these high, you know, the kind of people who own these great companies, well, maybe you'll get special treatment. But there's nothing new about that, and it's not systemic as far as, you know, privilege based on race or anything else. Privilege can be based on other things such as, you know, status, things like that. You don't think Hollywood stars aren't, that they don't have their behinds kissed when they go into restaurants? You've got to be kidding me. Now, are we happy with that? I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know, as long as when I go into a restaurant, someone comes up and says, would you like a seat? Blah, blah, blah. Sure, here we go. All right. That's it. So the arguments here are a little too far-fetched. So my point here is that citizen groups like those patriots over in Gulf Breeze are to be commended. We have got to have statewide, you know, folks like that standing up and saying no to the bad stuff that's going on. Which means that my last closing minutes, as I'm over the time. Oh, my goodness. Laurie, thank you so much. I'm now over 8 minutes. All right. Lastly, I want to say, 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, you're over 2 minutes.
Oh, good. All right. I'll take that. So here we have HB 440. I said this last week. I think Laurie posted it on their Facebook page. HB 440 is something that we need to get out of the House Education Committee and have a vote on it. So we've asked people to call the Speaker of the House. We've asked to call, you know, Representative Collins. We've asked people to call every member of the board. If you go to the Common Sense Campaign website, you'll find all of this on there where you can just click on a link and find out who these people are and call them. Please do it. We have got to get rid of Common Core, and we're doing as much as we can with the limited means that we have, but social media can help us if you all will get involved. So, Laurie, once again, it goes too fast.
Yes, it does.
But I really appreciate your letting me have a little bit of extra time today. Please get involved. Call the state house of that, our state speaker and Representative Collins. Tell them we want Common Core repealed. Thanks again. Y'all take care. God bless. Have a great week. It looks like it's going to be sunny this week. Look out.
Very nice.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi from the Common Sense Campaign. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 and 90 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181. If you missed part of this program or you want to tell a friend, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com.